Listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Guida Brown, former executive director of the Hope Council, Dr. Steve Brown, retired professor of educational leadership and school law, Dr. Karen Sconsert, chair of the education department and associate professor at Carthage College, Dr. Jonathan Shaler, professor of communications at UW-Parkside, and Stephanie Skilba, Vice President for Community and Government Relations at Gateway Technical College. And now, here's today's moderator for Education Matters.
Welcome to Education Matters. I'm Bob Haggerty. And today I have, a friend that came in to join me today. And I've known her all the way, before high school, when she was at Lance, we were at Lincoln, Katie Gurman Scamardo. Katie, welcome.
So. Thank you for having me.
And she's been a teacher for 27 years?
I started in 93, but I had breaks when I had my children, and some years were part-time. So I started in Kenosha Unified in the year 2000.
Okay. So 24 at Unified, and you've done some other stuff on the teaching side. You teach art?
I do.
So we're going to break this up into three different parts. Number one, because a lot of people say, you know, why did you do such? What made you do that? So we're going to go back into your past. We're going to talk about what made you become a teacher. Then we're going to deal with your teaching years. And I really want to call it two periods, pre-COVID, post-COVID. And at that point, then talk about where you are now and what the future may hold for you.
Mm-hmm.
And anything else that you want to throw in.
Okay.
You know? So we'll go ahead. So you're an art teacher. I always knew, by the way, if you, and she's sitting and cringing, I know, but you've got to see her pictures, her landscapes, photographs. She is incredibly talented. And I think, personally, I would sign the petition to make her, that they would have to put some up in the Kenosha County building, the pictures of what you do down on the lakefront.
Well, thank you. You are too kind. I kind of just joke to my friends that I'm kind of a sky watcher, always watching the clouds, watching the storms, watching this, you know, whatever's happening that is maybe different than the norm. And I try to capture it, and I live in the perfect location to do that because we have our beautiful harbor area and lakefront, and so it just sometimes calls to me.
What made you become a teacher? When did it come into your mind that you, number one, why art? And number two, why be a teacher?
Well, I would probably have to start with why art. When I was a high school student, I didn't know really what I wanted to do. And I got into photography at Tremper. And Eric Johnson was my teacher, and he must have recognized something, and he, kind of not really understanding what I was getting into, he asked me to get 10 photos ready, and he entered them into, I believe it's called the Scholastic Art Awards. And I came into school one day, and he said, all 10 of your photos are up in Milwaukee at the Milwaukee Art Museum, and there's an award ceremony, and you need to attend. So I asked my mom and dad to drive me up there, and we were sitting there, and they were announcing award after award after award, and I was so embarrassed because I thought, oh, my God, I made a total mistake. I must have goofed something up. Like, clearly, I'm not supposed to be here. And then they announced that my whole portfolio had, I don't remember what the awards were anymore, the whole portfolio was moving on to New York to Nationals.
Wow.
And then I guess that's what made me think, you know, I think this might be something that not only am I passionate about, but other people are taking an interest in. So I went to art school, and I was in media arts doing film and photography.
And you went where?
To Minneapolis College of Art and Design. And got my Bachelor of Arts there. and worked in the advertising photography field for a few years, but I knew that that wasn't quite what I wanted to do, and I had always thought I was going to be a teacher at some point. So I moved back to Kenosha, and I went to Carthage and got certified to teach, and got my master's, and I've been teaching, you know, ever since. And then I guess the why teaching, you know, that becomes a stronger and stronger thing that resonates with me, because I think the role of teacher isn't what it used to be. And I realize the value I have in a lot of my students' lives. And at this point, it's really not even about teaching art or whatever subject you're teaching. It's about how you're helping someone's social, emotional learning, their heart, their, you know, all of it. It's like, you know, helping be a good human for little humans.
I knew you were going to say something about this. And so I put together teachers that made a difference in my life. And of those, very few of them, it was the class that they taught. It was that they taught you to be a better person. Coach Davies, and to be a better man. Pam Ziering from she was a music teacher at Lincoln, introduced my wife and I. Jerry Burmeister from Tremper. He is the reason I have an undergrad in history. Max Baer, the econ teacher, the reason I have a PhD in economics. Mary Snyder, who was the debate coach. Terry Lawler, and you laugh when I say that name. The first paper that I got returned back in Comp for College, you could never do this now. This is the 80s. The top of the paper said, "Are you really this stupid?" But he knew what a person needed to motivate them. I mean, today you couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. But back in the 80s, are there teachers? You said Mr. Johnson. I remember him. Other teachers that were really instrumental? And did you ever have the opportunity to work with them?
Well, funny you say that. So my very first interview in Kenosha Unified, Eric was on the committee. And I remember saying to him, well, I'd really like your job, because at the time he was teaching photography and ceramics, which were two of my passions. But I was, by the time he retired, then I had little children. I wasn't ready to work full-time. So I see him around town quite often, because, of course, then we worked together as colleagues for a lot of years. I am not prepared for that question, because I'm trying to think back. I mean, I really remember my counselor in high school, Mr. England.
Mr. England, yes. Absolutely. Tremper.
Just being a good and kind person.
Yes. Not a job I would want. Being the school counselor, I think that would be an incredibly difficult job.
I almost got certified to get my counseling certificate
A
couple of years ago, and then I didn't. But
so you became a teacher, and we were just talking with Dave Cole prior, and he asked a question I didn't think about. Did you travel? Did you have to go in between schools?
Mm-hmm.
And how is that? I mean, I've taught college, so I've never taught at the preschool, middle school, high school level, and I certainly didn't have to go from building to building, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes away. And buildings have personality.
Yep.
So how do you go from building to building and adjust that way?
It's not easy. The majority of my time in the last 20 years or so has been in the Brass neighborhood. My home school is Brass. There have been times that I've been full-time, and then sometimes the numbers are down and I will have to travel a day. It isn't difficult if all the people involved understand that you are only there for a day, and that you have a whole nother building and a whole nother, you know, set of students that the numbers are much more than the school you're at for that one day. So as long as everyone understands, like, that you can't be 100% in two places, it's all right. It's not easy. In fact, I carry, like, this thing on wheels now because I often do a lot of my prepping at Brass and then carry all my supplies back and forth. And my books that I'm using, or my, you know, all the different things. And the one arm, well, the one year I ended up having to get a pinched nerve surgery.
Because heavy?
I was carrying this bag all the time. So I now carry something that has wheels. But when I take that one little day, I could, the list of schools I've been at has been very large because of that one day. So I began my, when I first came into Kenosha Unified, I was at Jane Vernon for 0.33. Then I went 0.5 to at the old Casel before it merged.
So let me, 0.33 means you did a third part-time? I mean, you were part-time one-third of 40 hours,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
Okay. So then your 0.5 would be halftime.
Yep. So then I went to halftime, and I was at Casel. And then from there, I went to Durkee. And then I picked up for the other half when I went full-time. It was Durkee and Lincoln. And Durkee and Lincoln became Brass. And then while at Brass, there became a time where I had to do a day at Ebsola. And after that, I had to do a day at Jefferson. And then I did a day at Grant. I've done a day at Forest Park. I think that's all of them. So it's been...
Wow.
I've been a few places.
You have. And you know, I'm not good with names. I'm good with faces. And I can remember a portfolio. Years back, I just can't tell the name that they belong to. It's important as a teacher for that relationship to be able to have those names. How do you do that?
Well, key word right there, relationships. It is very hard when you're in a building one day to build strong relationships. And that is something that I'm actually very good at. When
you always have been. I mean, honestly, that has always been something.
So that was an argument at one point about why we shouldn't be, you know, having teachers go some places for just a day, because you're really not, you don't have the time to really connect well with the students. You might learn their name. Those places I was only a day, you know, maybe towards, like, you know, the third quarter, I'd really start to get a sense of the kid and start to feel like a relationship. But then, again, those little pieces were off and bounced around. So that is difficult. I mean, ideally, you want to keep your specialists, which is what art, music, and gym is called, within their building full time, because they can be then an instrumental part of, like, you know, support. And, you know, we're the people in the building that know every kid.
Sure, because you have everybody.
Right, and not everyone does. You might have a first grade teacher that has no idea who those fifth grade kids are over there, you know. So when you have someone in the building that knows every kid by name, and if you've been in a building as long as I have, or a neighborhood as long as I have, I not only know all the kids, a lot of them, I know their cousins, I know their aunties, I've taught their parents, I might know their grandmas, and that, you know, you can't really...
You can't replace that.
You can't replace that, no. In fact, I was just introduced to a new staff member this week. I went in to get my room ready, and someone I have worked with brought the new teacher in, who's got a, you know, a role of being a social, I forget what they're called, but they're social-emotional coaches, and she said, this is someone who's been in the district a long time, at this school for a long time. She knows everybody really well. So if you have any questions, you come talk to her, because she'll have answers. So I was like, yeah, that's, you know, that's about it.
Is that good or bad?
Well, it's why I stay where I stay. I have a lot of people ask me. I've had opportunity to move to easier schools, or different schools, less challenging schools, and I stay because of the relationships.
I know people that they did what they needed to in the rest of their classes, but there were specialty classes that kept them in school, or people with sports, music, art. Do you still find that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I had a situation a couple years ago. There was a very talented young lady that loved art, and she was a sweetheart. I didn't know this at the time, but apparently she was having a lot of really bad social anxiety. And when they sat down and kind of did a deep dive into what was going on, they realized the only day of the week she was coming to school was on art day. And she admitted that's the only day she can muster up the strength to come to school. So we put a whole behavior program together for her that, if she made it to a certain amount of days, she could have an extra art class with me. And so it definitely not everybody's thing, but for some people, it's their only thing.
What do you do? I joke, but I'm not joking. What do you do with people like me that she laughs? I mean, I must have been the greatest nightmare for any art teacher because I can't even do a stick man. It's just, I love art. I love the look at it. What do you do? I mean, I would have sat in your class and I would have really liked what I saw, but there was no way I could have done it.
Well, I first of all try to do a variety of things where it's not all about drawing carefully. We do clay, we do paint. Sometimes it's very abstract, so you don't have to know how to draw to still make something beautiful. But if someone does want to draw something specific, I call it guided drawing, and I break it down into really simple shapes and lines, and most people can follow that.
Now, I'm bringing this up because you've extended out. You do your teaching, mm-hmm. I mean, and then you actually teach older students and adults privately as well. Is that all year round or just in the summer?
I actually just started the business in the spring. I became an LLC, and it's called Art from the Heart Kenosha. And the website is artfromtheheartkenosha.com. And I have classes, small group classes children, but I also am starting some adult classes. I go into the teens. So I believe most of my classes are broken into like age 6 to 10 and then 10 to 14. And I've been running them all summer. It's been great. It's been a lot of fun. But I do go back to work on Monday. So now for the fall and winter, they will be after school hours and they will be weekends.
And you do, I'm trying to think of the term. I should remember this because I have a son that had an art major. If you have number of disciplines, oils, clay, what do you call when you make a sculpture? Mm-hmm. That do you offer all of that? I mean, do you do all of that?
What is that? Master of many trades and
nope. Yeah.
I can't think of it. So I do a lot of painting and drawing type classes that have different themes or motivations. They might be some of the classes are like after famous art styles. Some are after different arts from around the world. But I also have the classes I had today. I had a sewing and felting class. I had air dry clay. I had an advanced drawing this morning. I will be doing copper tooling, printmaking.
Okay.
Windows.
Where did you get into all of this stuff? I mean, where did you, because a lot of that's pretty specialized areas of hobbies for you, I'm imagining.
Well, when you're teaching as long as I have and you're always trying to think of, new and fresh ideas, and sometimes those things come from online. Back in the day, we would have art conferences and things would be demoed to us, different supplies, different techniques. So at this point in my career, there's not a lot of things I haven't done.
You said back in the day. Let's go back. Let's go back that to the 90s. How is teaching different?
So different. So in the 90s, I think teachers had a lot more freedom. And therefore they were able to be very passionate about what they were doing. And the example I'll give, and this is how a lot of people taught, but I'm just thinking of when my son was in first grade. When they covered a topic, they did it like grandiose. So let's say that the topic was, they were studying about Native American Indians. They built a teepee in their room. They did art projects that were in the style of some different things. They, you know, had names. The whole room was decorated. It became a whole immersion experience.
Right.
So the kids learned everything that they needed to, and it was in such a fun way that it was a creative outlet for the teacher, and it was an exciting way for kids to learn. Now I think a lot of that has been taken away, the freedoms. I think teachers have very rigid, their day is very planned out. Their testing is very planned out. You know, there's not room really anymore for the creative side of teaching. And I know teachers, I mean, I could go on and on. I think that when you and I were in school, kids came in, they sat down, they were given a lesson, they did the lesson. They moved on to another lesson, they did the lesson.
Right.
There wasn't a lot of disruption other than maybe kids being a little chatty. That is not what is going on now. I did reach out to my colleagues in the last couple of days asking, you know, in preparation for coming here, what would you want the public to know? I think most people have a really distorted view of what really goes on in classrooms. I think we remember classrooms how they were when we were kids.
Sure. Because we experienced it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Today, the kids that are coming in, there's a lot of them that are very dysregulated. They have a lot of emotional issues or anger issues. It seems as though kids that have special needs and that have IEPs, it seems like there's a lot more.
Okay. You used the word, I want to make sure everybody, IEP is?
Individualized Educational Plan.
Okay.
I think that's what it stands for. I don't know. So, we always use acronyms.
So that means that you have another plan for them because they're not able to be able to do what you're currently doing.
Right. Okay. Right. So you're still one teacher in front of 25 kids, but instead of 25 kids sitting at their desk doing what you're asking them to do, there's a lot of behavioral interruptions that make teaching very difficult. And it's difficult because the law doesn't really allow for much to happen. If you have, trying to think of how to, if it's written in a child's plan, you know, here are some of the problems they experience. When they're angry, they might bite or spit or throw things. Just try to redirect them. Like, you're given a lot of things to try, but there's really not of, I feel like teachers' hands are tied, administrators' hands are tied. There's not a lot of consequences that can happen. I know when we were younger, like if somebody was a little, you know, causing some trouble, they were, you know, either, I don't know, because you didn't see it. So either
right.
They were, they were sent home, or,
well, I'd
you know.
Say the worst thing in the world would have been called my parents.
Right. Well,
not
now,
necessarily today.
We have parents that won't answer the phone. I mean, even if you call and say, you know what, you need to come get your child because they were just in a fight, there are parents who won't answer the phone or who will not come get their child. And so, you know, these are the struggles that are happening today. So I know it's very disheartening for teachers a lot because they feel like they're kind of putting their heart and soul in to not only teaching these kids, but parenting them and counseling them and feeding them. And, you know, those goes on and on.
Well, I'm hearing about the statistics of the number of people leaving the profession.
Mm-hmm.
And it's staggering. the number where the number of new teachers that don't stay in the field and the number of people that have been longtime teachers that decide that they're going to look for a different opportunity. Mm-hmm. At the same time, that corporate teaching, where because of your unique abilities of being able to help people learn, a lot of teachers are looking at corporate teaching where they can double and triple their income and still get satisfaction and teach people that want to be taught. Try to give me a sense from the 90s to the late 90s to the 2000s. Where did we start the change? When you started in the 90s, did you have the same problems? And let's not go to COVID. Let's go to 2019.
Things, I guess, have been getting progressively more difficult for teachers. Like I said, I think that the kids are just coming in with a lot more problems and a lot more anxiety and a lot more depression and a lot more anger, which makes just the actual teaching difficult. And then on top of that, and this is probably one of the things that hits home for me more, is the level of disrespect that happens. So you might feel disrespected by your students, but unfortunately, you also feel disrespected by the public. If you ever read any kind of article in the paper and teaching comes up or teachers, like the things that people say, it's like, ooh, ouch. You know, and I think, like I said, for so many adults, they really don't know what's going on in the schools. And I think if they did, they'd hopefully have a very different level of respect. But the other thing is, you know, it isn't a high-paying job. And at one point in time, it was still worth it because you had excellent benefits. And little by little, those benefits have been going away. So if you're a young teacher, I've been teaching long enough, like, I can make a living at it. But the new teachers coming in that have student loans that are getting paid, you know, a salary that is they're never going to see grow very high, and also don't have the benefits that we once had, they're discouraged. And when you're feeling disrespected and when your passion for wanting to teach the kids, you know, is constantly getting interrupted or stifled, you know, I think a lot of them are just saying, no, I can't do my whole life like this.
Well, I often say there are a few professions that really aren't professions or jobs. There's calling. Teaching is one of those. Nurses, another one. Firefighter and police officer. Those are callings. The person that runs toward the fire and not away from it, that's a special person. The person that could make a lot more money on the outside beside, but decides to teach the children, that is a special person. The new teacher is coming in. Where are they coming from? What is bringing, because, and I know we're skipping probably into the last 8 years, and this is just my personal opinion, and that is that education in general has been looked down upon compared to generations prior. Just not teachers, just, but actual, there's so many things that you're reading. You don't have to go to college. You don't, and I'm the first one to say, no, you don't have to go to college, but you do have to do probably something after high school. There's nothing wrong with trade school. That's a fantastic thing. But you have to learn a skill to be able to make a wage. Do you see that? Do you not? The overall idea of what education is and the need for education.
Well, there is a big shortage of people going into education. If you, you know, kind of look at the stats from colleges, like their numbers are way down. Because of that, districts are scrambling and often hiring people that are not certified teachers. So, especially in hard to fill positions.
Sure.
So I don't know what's going to become of that. I know right now at my school, we have a long-term sub. We've had a long-term sub in the music position more than once because they aren't finding, you know, certified music teachers. I know last year when school started, I'm going to say throughout Canoosh Unified, and I really can only speak of
your
my
experience.
Area,
right.
But I believe we started the school year with subs about 3 or 4 in both art and 3 or 4 in music. I know that many, many schools have teachers teaching special education that are not certified, that are on an emergency license, because there just aren't applicants that have the qualifications.
Sure. Let's move forward.
Okay.
Let's talk COVID.
Mm-hmm.
My wife taught at university during this time. It was, to her, the final straw because of the need for human contact for her, that how do you teach a nurse when the student never touches a patient? How do you teach art without having, how do you do it online? And tell me, and I'm going to stop. How was that year?
Oh, that year was crazy. First of all, I am not a techie person. So it was a very scary thing. I had to learn a lot really quick. What I would do is I bought myself a webcam and I had it on my hands. So after I would face-to-face talk with the kids, I'd say, you know, get your supplies, you know, yada, yada. And then I would switch my screen over to just show my hands. And when I talked about doing like guided drawing, that's kind of what most of it was, because a lot of them didn't have supplies in their house.
I was going to ask you, where did they get the supplies?
I mean, Kenosha Unified did a good job of putting together little art kits, but not everybody even came to get them. So, or they lost them, or their little brother broke all the crayons.
Right,
or, you know,
the dog ate them.
Yeah, so I did, that's how I handled it. I did a lot of guided drawing and then, you know, guided, you know, grab whatever supply you can find and, you know. But it's funny you mentioned human contact, and I'm going to tell you a funny story about my own self, which I never realized until COVID. Teaching at Brass, we're a very affectionate school. Like, there's constantly hugs and high fives and, you know, probably about a month or two into, like, lockdown, I was said to my family, I said, okay, you people have to start touching me more, because I'm used to getting about 500 hugs a day, and this is, like, withdrawal, I think. Like, the human contact piece, that was hard, I mean, for everybody. I'm just, you know, some people were completely isolated, and so I'm thankful I wasn't. But it made me realize, yes, human contact and you know, face-to-face is really so important. I think, you know, our district did as the best they could. You know, it was a hard thing to navigate. And
well, who could have, I mean, let's
right,
be honest.
Right.
Who could have planned
right.
for a 100-year pandemic?
Right.
Right.
But I'm, you know, seeing the effects afterwards. Boy, I remember we did, because there was still testing. So the kids had to come in one day to do their testing, and we had them all spread out and everybody's masked. And the kids, like, even the kids that had left school joyfully, you know, before the pandemic, like, I noticed, like, they weren't talking to each other. They weren't making eye contact.
They were scared.
And I thought, oh, my God, what is happening? You know, these poor kids. It didn't take long for that kind of freeze kind of thing to go away. But it definitely affected their social skills. And
which they have a problem with to begin with, because everything, mm-hmm. I'm doing the fingers online type of texting move
right.
here.
Right. So I think that's, again, some of the challenges that we're having now is And I'm not going to judge, you know, because when I was a parent, when my kids were young, there weren't cell phones. So I was interacting with my kids. I was playing with my kids, or, you know, we were cooking, or, you know.
Right.
But it was, you know, we were very much connecting. And, I mean, any of us can go into a restaurant or even at a park, and you can see the parents just sitting on their phone and not playing with their kids. So I feel like, you know, that's... I don't know. It's that the social development was definitely affected. And I always kind of, I think about it a lot, because I have had certain bubbles of kids that came back higher. And I was like, I wonder why. Like, one of the first classes that, because when we came back, you had an option of,
right,
you know, of being online or in person. Excuse me. And I did both. I was on a cart part of the day, and the part of the day I was on the computer. And that year, you know, I'm not even gonna count that year because that was still weird. But the year after that, when the kids came full day, you know, we're back at school for the first time probably then in my career, every kindergartner knew how to write their name. And I was like, wait. So then I, you know, was kind of thinking back. I'm like, so maybe, and again, different populations, different everything, but I thought maybe where I teach, a lot of those parents that maybe were working before were home with their kids going over basics, like how to tie a shoe and how to write your name.
That's a great thing.
Right. But I've also, you know, I haven't found any consistencies, because in other buildings I taught at, I was like, wow, nobody here knows how to write their name. Like, so, you know, I guess we won't know for 50 years just what, you know, how all this affected the kids in their education.
When you look at it and you jump the year then now, and everyone is in, and we are checking time here. We're looking and saying, where do we go now?
We're playing catch up still.
So what you see is that we're catching up, and I hear this, a 30-second story. My fraternity has a building that they rent out, and we have about 7 proms. And I make sure the water and the lemonade is full. And what I saw, and this is actual, this young gentleman and young lady are together at the prom, and they sit down next to each other. And instead of talking, they're texting each other.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we go from here? I mean, I can't imagine. That's prom. What happens a few years down the road when marriage and babies come? And instead of getting up and talking to the baby, are they going to try to text the baby? Where do we go?
I'm sure you've seen this too. The other day, I was in Lake Geneva and I was eating lunch, and there was a family, and there was an infant, like, wasn't very old, maybe 6 months, and they had a phone in their hand.
Oh,
and
yes.
I thought, oh my gosh, that's so hard. Like, I want to go
take
that phone away.
Right.
Where do we go? So I guess one thing that I would say is an overlying thought when people ask about what's wrong with education today, it's a societal problem. And everyone seems to want to make it an educational problem. It's happening at home first, or not. So if you're not going to put in the time at home, like, teachers, you know, there's only so much they can do. And as a society, you know, when everybody's just staring at their phones and not interacting, or, you know, not picking up their kids if their kids are in trouble,
right,
or worse yet, blaming the teachers instead of, you know, there's going to have to be a big shift, or education's not going to get any better, because, you know, we're doing the best we can with what we got in. And what we are able to do legally.
Right.
And I don't know the answers of the societal problems.
You put something on your your Facebook page a couple days ago.
Okay.
27 years, and you were wondering out loud whether this is your last year.
Hmm.
I'm not asking you to make that decision. What's brought it to that? And do you see others? I mean, you brought up the point where the new teacher, they said, oh, talk to Katie if there's a question as far as if you need something. That's something that's needed. Experience, mm-hmm. guidance. What do you see for you? And what do you see as far as the experience of teachers? We're not old, okay? We're on the back half of middle age.
Okay.
Okay? And so where do we go?
Well, it's funny that you brought that up, and I'm glad I didn't start tearing up. Because, so Brass is a school, like, on the last day, like, the kids cry. Like, everybody's crying because the bonds and the relationships in for some kids, even if they don't act like it, like school is their safe place and their happy place.
Right.
So not this past spring, but the spring prior, I'd had quite a few friends retire and whatnot. And I said to Mike, like, for some reason, like, I'm so sad this year. Like, I have this just sinking feeling, like, I don't know how I'll ever leave. And I can't imagine leaving these kids. And he said, well, you probably feel that way because you know the end is near and you're probably not going to see your kindergartners all the way through fifth grade. Well, I lost it for the night. I was like, oh, my God, I can't. How am I ever going to retire? Like, I'm a blubbering fool about it. So and the reason I'm starting to think about it is I want to stay healthy. I don't want to get hurt at work. That might sound overdramatic to some people, but
no,
it isn't. There's a lot of teachers who get hurt in their line of teaching. And I also don't want to I guess I just want to go out on a good note. I don't want to go out on a bad note, either hurt or maybe emotionally just too drained. So that's why I started thinking about this business, because I thought then I can still teach,
right,
and I can control my environment. I can keep the classes small. I'm working with people who share my passion in art. And then I'm not completely just not teaching anymore.
I want to say thank you. Katie Gurman Scarmaro, thank you so much. Always Katie Gurman to me. It's been a pleasure. It's always so nice to be able to talk to friends from 40 years and where life takes us. And this is WGTD's Education Matters. I'm Bob Hegarty. Join me next month, as always.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard Saturday mornings at 10:30 here on WGTD. Archive programs are available on our website at WGTD.org.
Support comes from the Kenosha County Aging and Disability Resource Center. Dementia care specialists provide free support and education for people with dementia and their caregivers to ensure quality of life while living at home. For more info, call 262-605-6646.
I'm Gregory Berg, and I hope that you can join me for Monday's morning show here on WGTD. But I need to warn you, we're going to be talking about one of the creepiest creatures on the face of the earth, the eel. My guest is Ellen Ruppel-Schell, who has written a fascinating book about this fascinating creature called Slippery Beast, a true crime natural history with eels. Join me for Monday's morning show beginning just after 8.
Support for WGTD's local news and public affairs commitment comes from Casey Family Options, a tradition of trust. For more information, including how to get started and pre-planning, visit caseyfamilyoptions.com or call 262-653-0667.
Saturday nights on WGTD HD1 is your place for jazz, big band blues, and more. Beginning at 7 p.m., it's Saturday Night Bandstand with Mike Kehoe, followed by Tim Bell's classic big bands and John Nicholson's At the Water's Edge. Then it's rotating hosts at 11 p.m., Joe Mooney from Jazz A La Carte, Dave Overby with the Jazz Club, Matt Nicholson from Jazz After Hours, and Davey Moe of Beyond Category. Locally hosted Jazz Saturday evenings, 7 p.m. to midnight.